of Tarek's invisible shackles. Too many. Your family sends their regards, I sneer, then slash my blade through his throat. Rave. Chapter 4. Tarek's blood splashes across the snow, plumes of it spurting from the gory gash. I reach into my pocket and slip on my ring. The racket banging against my eardrums snips off, leaving only the organic sounds of Claude squealing past corners without her manic laughter or slicing song. I crack my neck from side to side, rolling my shoulders, ever thankful for iron's nulling properties. I can tune her out on my own if I concentrate, but it takes effort, and my guard drops while I sleep. Claude's great and all, but not when you're jostled awake by a mid-slumber squeal. And she's painfully loud. Plug fingers in my ears loud, though I wouldn't dare. Don't want to get on her bad side. It's said the louder one hears the elemental songs, the greater the connection, the more power one can derive from learning their language and speaking their words. A blessing and a curse when it comes to the wild air goddess, since her squeals can be sharp enough to slit skin. Nothing worse than feeling like your brain's being filleted into fluffy segments. I tuck my veil back into place, hiding the bottom half of my face as I move to the wind tunnel's entrance and peek out, looking left and right along the thin path etched into the wall like a groove, making sure my cloaked observer hasn't shown up to play catch the iron blade between your ribs. Not seeing him or anyone else, I step farther forward, glancing down toward the ditch far below. Eddies of snow tangle with clusters of luminous sow moths, but I see no other movement, nor can I see anybody on the stair path beneath me, nor the one below that. I look across the massive cleft to the wall's parallel half, seeing nobody on the north side, nor on the nearby sky bridges that stretch between both. An appreciated surprise. I step away from the edge and turn, my footsteps echoing as I walk back to Tarek's corpse still hanging from his hand pinned to the wall, his head flopped to the side. I extract my blade from the stone, and his body heaps into a steaming puddle of red. Looking at my gown, I click my tongue at the spurts of blood deepening the shade in places. I'd hoped for a clean job this time. Every time. Never happens. I unbutton the overlay on my skirt, rip the top layer from my bodice, and pull the tarnished fabric free, revealing the perfect replica beneath, balling the spoiled layer into a parcel I toss down the rubbish chute that's tunneled into the wall. One of many chutes scattered around the city, which delve past ground level, past a few levels of the undercity, and spew out into the lair of a full-grown velvet trog that feasts on Gore's trash. I tip my head to the side, gauging the distance between Tarek and the chute, deciding it's probably a little high for me to heft him into it. Better just to shove him out the hole in the wall for the many shade-borne predators to pick at. Releasing a sigh, I look at his limp body, picturing a world without those who like to gobble up shiny things, then shit them out broken. Imagine, I mutter, crouching to wipe my blades on his pants before I tuck them away. Just imagine. I shake my head, grip Tarek around the ankles, and heave his weight with all the strength of my burning thighs, thankful we got almost all the way to the end before he pounced. As I drag him toward the drop, the wind sweeps through the tunnels so hard I'm certain it gives him a shove, and I smile. Claude's such a crazy, spiteful bitch. I love her. I maneuver Tarek until he's so close to the edge his arm is dangling, then wipe my hands on his tunic, crouch behind him, and put all my weight into pushing him over, catching myself on the stone as he slips from my grasp. Leaning forward, I watch him plummet toward the wall's rocky, sawtooth base far below. He impales upon a slice of stone that cuts all the way through his abdomen, and I find myself wishing I'd kept him alive so he could experience it. Damn. Missed opportunity. Standing, I use the edge of my boot to scrape the bloody smear of snow into a pile and kick it off the side. Pocketing Tarek's hand, I saunter down the wind tunnel, pausing just before the entrance, my stare catching on a bit of parchment stuck to the wall. I step closer, eyes narrowing on the script. The rebellious group known as Fir du'Ath has intercepted yet another carriage of fresh elemental conscripts on their way to Drelgod for corporal training. These are your children they're stealing, taking who knows where, likely exploiting their unique gifts for their own political gain. They are weakening our kingdom, making us vulnerable to attack. This must be stopped. Any fruitful information will be rewarded with 10 buckets of bloodstone and complimentary accommodation on the north side of the wall, ground level, for 3 phases. The crown. Stealing children? Exploiting their gifts for our own political gain? What a load of spangle shit. And the crown's no longer threatening those who engage with us, but rather dangling a bountiful lure impossible to turn down, especially for those who were homeless, working in the mines, getting by on a few pouches of bloodstone per phase. This changes things. Snarling, I rip the bullshit parchment free and scrunch it into a ball, just stalking around the corner when I slam into something hard. A firm hand wraps around my wrist, steadying me. The same wrist that's attached to the hand currently clawed around the balled-up bit of parchment, offering a hefty reward for, well, me. I look up in time for a blow of wind to push back the hood of the mysterious male from the Hungry Hollow. My heart plummets, breath loosens. For the first time since Fallon taught me speech, I'm lost for words. He's harshly chiseled, raw, fiercely beautiful. My lungs pull full of his scent, so deep and drugging, like smelted stone topped with a ladle of cream. I hold the breath hostage, taking him in, admiring his black hair that falls just past his shoulders. It's half pulled back off his face that's partially shadowed by a few loose strands failing to soften his regard. His piercing eyes, the rich, molten color of fired wood. His brows are thick, the lower half of his face shaded by a dark beard that adds a rugged texture to his already robust appearance, like he belongs in one of the renowned warrior clans that took root amongst the Baltanic Plains millions of phases ago, wielding an axe and a blood-lusting roar. His gaze rips from mine, bouncing around our surroundings, searching every shadowed dip. I notice the tapered tip of his right ear is punched through with a small black cuff that encases part of the shell, but no beads. He's showcasing as a null, minus the clip, but I know better than to assume he doesn't hear any of the elemental songs, especially given the immense energy rolling off him, shoving against me, making me feel as if he's so much bigger than the space he's currently inhabiting. Which is a lot, being a head and a half taller than me, his broad chest and shoulders reminding me of a saber scythe. The bold, muscular sort of build often found in those with strong roots to the burn, the hot, ever-sunny northern kingdom. His condemning stare lands on me again, and it's like a swift kick to the ribs. Winding. Chest deflating. He's looking at me like I just shoved a dead elemental off the wall. Or maybe I'm imagining things. I'm certain there was nobody else around. The line between his brows deepens.
Are you okay?
His dense voice skims my heart like flint scoured across stone, leaving a residue of sparks that crackle through my icy bloodstream in the strangest way. Am I okay? I mirror his frown. Are you mad?
Possibly.
He rumbles, voice like a spill of warm, rolling rocks. A flake of snow lands atop my forehead, and my breath hitches as he lifts his spare hand, bringing it toward my face, like perhaps he's going to sweep the flake away. I catch myself falling into the motion before I realize he's reaching for my veil. The air between us turns stiff and sterile. Even Claude stops her whipping stir. I wouldn't. I purr, pressing a small iron dagger to his crotch, the dagger always notched just up my sleeve for times such as this. His brow bumps up.
Quick hands.
It's iron.
I can smell that.
He growls, his voice thick with the rich, exotic accent of Northerners.
Name. Now. And not the fake one you gave to whoever hired you at the Hungry Hollow.
Thorough. Interesting. I lean more pressure into my little iron blade that suddenly feels vastly inadequate against everything it's pressed against, though I'm not one to stand down from a challenge. No. But I'll serve you your own cock if you don't let go of my wrist. My words are sultry smooth, passed to him like a ballad I'm certain he's going to appreciate less than the songs I sang all slumber. Until the corner of his mouth flicks up the slightest amount, surprising me. He makes a gruff sound, drops my wrist, then steps back, forging a small cleft of space between us that feels like a canyon I'm standing on the edge of, the arches of my feet tingling as a strange flutter takes flight inside my belly. Confusion scrambles my thoughts. Thank you, I announce, straightening my shoulders. Keeping my blade pointed at his crotch, I crunch the parchment into a tighter ball, then stuff it into my pocket. Maybe I won't have to kill him. He didn't see me kill Tarek, hasn't seen my face nor the notice I tore off the wall. He certainly hasn't tried to take liberties with me. Perhaps he's not the monster I thought he was while he watched me sing All Slumber with an obsessive sort of severity. Not to mention the time it would take to drag him to the same edge I shoved Tarek over if I were forced to slit his throat where we stand. That's even if I could drag him. I'd probably have to hack him into smaller bits, a messy task that sponges time, something I'm swiftly running out of, Tarek's hand a heavy weight in my pocket. If you'll excuse,
there's a dead male face speared through the gut down there,
he says, brow arched, jerking his chin toward the wind tunnel's gaping exit to the unmerciful plummet below, his voice a rough monotone that cleaves an even deeper split between my options. I just came from there, and I saw no male. I keep my dagger steady, muscles poised. All I saw was a monster. I hold his gaze, perched upon the sharp edge of indecision, waiting for his response to stretch between us before I decide which way I'll fall. Whether I categorize this male in the same box as Tarek or a different one. A safer one. His eyes bore into me like he's excavating bits of my soul as he says,
On that, I heartily agree.
I frown, open my mouth, close it. Safe box it is. Don't follow me. I bite out, then pull my dagger from his crotch and stalk off down the nearby staircase without looking back. Rave. Chapter 5. I dump Tarek's hand down a scarcely used, pre-designated rubbish chute, waiting with my head pushed through the hole until I hear a whistle from another member of Fir Du'ath deep in the Undercity. Confirmation the package was caught, that the others will now work to free the younglings. Being an Elding Blade, I kill. Nothing more. I certainly don't rescue. That task left to others not so comfortable getting bloody. But part of me almost yearns to, this time. This mission has been so personal to me. A large-scale passion project I fought hard to have approved. One that tunneled the Ath's resources away from our regular missions that focus on implicating the crown. I turn, lean against the wall, close my eyes, and smile, a pleasant warmth spreading through my chest as I imagine the light igniting in those younglings' eyes when they realize they're free. Truly free. In a way I doubt I'll ever fully understand. Make yourself indispensable and folk dig their claws in. Doesn't matter if they're good or bad or somewhere in the middle. If there's anything I've learned from this life, it's that. Still, I hope those younglings like it at the Flourish. I've never been to the underground safe haven ruled by the Elding, and though I've heard it somewhere in the south, I don't think I'll ever know for certain. See it with my own two eyes. That would be considered retirement, and I doubt the leader of the Fir Duath has any interest in relinquishing my usefulness. Instead, plying me with placating missions I'll happily accept. Especially ones that end like this, filling me with this warm feeling of momentary contentment. Like I've just scrubbed one of the many stains from this big, beautiful world I so desperately want to love. Besides, I'm not so sure retirement would suit me. Not the sort that would undoubtedly come with a one-way trip to the Flourish. I think my fingers would get itchy. There's too much trash to take out. I step out onto one of the perilous sky bridges that stretches between both halves of the wall, the silent city so far beneath me. At 33 levels up, this one is the highest. Never used by others and crusted in layers of snow that crunch beneath my boots. Reaching the middle, I lie on my back, as close to the clouds as I can get, letting the cold sink through my gown, into my flesh and bones. Deeper. My eyelids flutter shut. Fat flakes of snow patter upon my face and the lax scoops of my hands, and I focus on each icy point of contact, loosening the muscles beneath, releasing some of the tension I'd collected throughout the slumber. Picturing myself as a dragon, wings outstretched, I tip and churn through the puffy pink clouds, so far above the world that all I hear is my heartbeat and the heavy thump of my imaginary wings. All I feel is the flexing strength of my body, untethered, free. An icy calm settles within me like a nesting beast, and I wiggle my toes, my fingers, slowly bringing myself back to reality. Opening my eyes, I look through a gap in the clouds to the moon of a perished molten maw resting above the city. Perhaps the biggest one I've seen, bound in a tight ball. Head tucked beneath its wing, its stony plumage brushed in shades of purple, pink, and blue. I stare at it, recalling the time Ruse mentioned the sad story about how that dragon got there. Not that I probed for details. In fact, I think I turned around and walked straight from her store without looking back. Sadness is like stones that stack inside you, making it harder to move. Ignorance is my self-preservation tonic, and I'll swear by it until I die. Sometimes, however, when I'm lying on what feels like the top of the world with a sleeping city beneath me, I wonder if that moon is ever tempted to fall, to crush Gore in a strike of spite for whatever caused it to soar up there and perch atop the Fade's decorated capital like a lingering threat. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe every last wisp of a dragon's cognizance dissolves the moment they solidify, and they don't decide to fall at all. Maybe something else rips them from the sky. And maybe that dragon didn't consider much of anything when it decided to curl up there. Maybe it wasn't fueled by thoughts of revenge, as I like to believe it was. Maybe it was just a convenient spot to die. Gaze still cast on the moon, I wiggle my hand into my pocket, retrieving the parchment lark I received at the Hungry Hollow and lifting it above my face, unfolding its wings, beak, and body until I'm left with a crimped square scrawled in Essie's handwriting. I hope you got your hand, since I know you won't read this until after you're done, which is anxiety-inducing, just so we're clear. What if I desperately need a stick of Porthonium to prevent the world from crumbling and you're too busy carving words into somebody's chest to unfold my lark still stuffed in your pocket? Think of the world, Rave. And the hyperfixation I'm currently nursing. Anyway, here's a very important list I'm sending because I know how you feel about me going to the Undercity alone. Patience is my biggest and most impressive virtue. I snort laugh. Essie has the patience of a waif hungry for a soul to sink its teeth into and not a pinch more. But good for her thinking otherwise. Enthusiasm suits her. A hand-sized lump of iron, so I can make more pins for your boot. 3 shaves of saber-scythe tusk, ideally from a mature beast well past their 10th shed. A 0.0112 etching stick reinforced enough to scour diamond. Just hand this list to Ruse because this probably makes no sense. Wise beyond your lifespan, I say, gaze skimming farther down her list. A jar of fluffy sow moth powder. Or if there's none in stock, can you catch me one, please? I'll collect the powder myself, then set it free. Promise. I cringe, remembering the last time I leapt around the ditch, armed with a glass jar and a holy lid. A full-body shudder almost rattles me to the core. I'll never forget the way the sow moth squeaked. I didn't even know they could squeak. Catch your own damn sow moth, I mutter, knowing damn well I'll catch her a bloody sow moth if the bloody store has no jars of bloody powder. My eyes narrow on the last request, half concealed by a blotch of Tarek Relican's blood. And lastly, please go to the Undercity and... splat. It's very, very, very important. Of course it is. I sigh, trying to scratch off the blood, despite knowing full well it's not going to work. According to Essie, there are many important things to be found in the filthy, rotten Undercity. Which makes sense for somebody whose world once revolved around the deep, craggy cleft in the ground beneath the wall. My mind tunnels back to the moment I found her dashing from the miner's muck hall with a stolen lump of stale bread in her filthy hands, undernourished, dressed in rags, hair shorn because she'd learned that males get heckled less than the females down there. She'd told me she was born in an abandoned shaft and that her parents set off for a shift in the mines and failed to return, long ago. That she'd never seen the sky, didn't know what the aurora was, or that we wake and sleep in rhythm with its rise and fall. I was still covered in the blood of a supervisor I'd caught doing terrible things to a miner when I took Essie to meet the sky, then promised to keep her safe. Harder than it sounds when everything she needs seems to come from the fucking Undercity. Contrary to her boast, she's rarely patient enough to send me a supply list. Frowning at the flattened lark, I try to scratch the blood off again, unsuccessfully, then pocket it and set my sight on the moon, hands clasped over my waist. Even if I did know what's scrawled beneath the splat of blood, I'm supposed to be keeping my distance until I get word the younglings from Tarek's cells are out of gore. I can, however, fetch Essie everything else if I stay out past the rise. Best I don't head straight home anyway, considering I chose not to eliminate the nice-smelling, mysterious loose end who may or may not believe I killed Tarek Relican. Creators. Why did I do that? I usually cut first, don't think later. I much prefer myself that way. Now I have to spend a small eternity checking over my shoulder, making sure the decision doesn't swing around and bite me in the ass. Diary entry. Elowen Nevan. Age, 9 phases. 5,030 phases after stone. Mommy and Poppy say I'm too young to have a dragon, and it doesn't matter that the moon plumes in the palace hutch let me sleep with them. They say wild moon plumes will drop from the sky the moment I step onto their spawning grounds, snatch me up, shake me until I'm limp, then feed me to their young. I think that's a plop of spangle poop. And I don't think it's very fair that I should have to wait until I'm 18 to find out for myself how big that plop of poop really is. Poppy said I can put my argument forth once I hear the elemental songs, and I've learned to speak them properly, but I think that's a plop of spangle poop, too. Hadeon waited a long time, and they never sang to him. And I've been listening really hard, every cycle, singing to the snow and the air and the ground and the flames. Nobody's singing back but Mommy and Poppy at slumber time. Not that I mind. I don't want to wear that silly stone, anyway. Mommy always looks so tired, like her head's heavy. Poppy's crown looks heavy too, but not in the same way. The stones on his are so pretty and shiny, and make him look proud and important. The stone on Mommy's is so black it looks like somebody could fall straight through it. Sometimes, I catch Mommy trying really hard to pull her diadem off while she screams and cries and folds herself up real small. It makes my heart hurt. I don't think that stone is very good for Mommy. Last slumber, I found her outside, crying in the dark while the falling snow stuck to her hair. Her sad sounds made me cry, too. I sang a song I'd hoped would make her feel better, but she just cried harder. She wiped my cheeks and told me she'd be okay, that she lost something important, but that my cuddles made her feel much better. Poppy found us then. He picked her up and took her inside, then tucked me into my pallet, kissed me on the nose, and told me it would make sense when I'm older. I don't think I want to understand.
Rave. Chapter 7. The bloated clouds crawl north in time for the aurora to peak above the eastern horizon. 10 luminous silver ribbons wiggling into view, moving to their own hypnotic beat. The world comes alive with the distant screech of molten maws, their scratchy yawns threatening to split the sky. I push up from the skybridge, groaning, my legs a little stiff from disposing of Tarek's body and lying in the snow. Yawning, I make for the north side, trekking down 33 levels of steep stairways until I step onto the ground level and into the already churning crowd. The ditch bustles with folk completing their early chores, clearing snow gathered before doors, chopping kindling, and fetching bottles of colk milk left beneath the eaves of those who can afford the run. Merchants roll by on colk-driven carts laden with tinctures, runed gadgets, and crates of exotic food, setting up shop for the day. A plethora of parchment larks flutter about, darting between folk and landing on outstretched hands, though some have no direction at all. Ghost larks, perhaps meant for somebody lost, that now spend their existence dancing with the fluffy sow moths I'm feeling far too tired to chase.
"Please have jars of dust," I murmur, jostling through the crowd.
Pausing by a store that's yet to open, I pretend to window shop while I check I'm not being followed, using the opportunity to ensure my veil still thoroughly conceals the lower half of my face, that there's no bloody stains anywhere on my gown that's cinched at my waist, the gathered bustle emphasizing my round hips. The tight bodice makes my already full breasts almost spill from the neckline, and though that played the part last slumber, I look entirely overdressed amongst the freshly woken folk churning about the ditch at my back. Not ideal. I grab the tail of my veil, rearranging it so it's draped across my bust, hiding all my perky, pale flesh. Much better.
I weave through the crowd until I reach a north side shop tucked beneath a windshield. Pink, powdery sunlight shoots through with a blow of fresh air, rustling the plants that dangle from the store's eave, its name crafted on a stone plaque set amongst the stained glass window fashioned to look like a montage of molten maw plumage. The Curly Quill. Parchment, pawn, and all your Rooney supplies. I yank the door open, taking a step into the long, lofty store lined with rows of ceiling-high shelves packed to the brim with everything a Rooney could possibly require. Stacks of flat parchment squares with pre-drawn activation lines, small tincture jars choked by dangly labels, leather-bound books dyed an array of colors to match their painted edges. There's an abundance of quills, jars of various etching sticks, and lumps of different ores and gemstones. Halfway through the doorway, I pause, watching a vibrant flock of parchment larks churn about the shelves with feathers attached to their ends, looking like miniature molten moths. Every time I come, the flock has doubled in size. I'm sure of it.
"Close the door before my pets escape," Ruse yells from the back of the shop, "or you'll not be doing business here for the rest of your existence."
I tug the door shut and weave between the shelves.
"You know I'd catch them for you, Ruse." "Don't sweet-talk me, Rafe. I'm eyeball deep in inventory and a hair's breadth away from losing my ever-loving mind."
I round the final shelves, coming to a stone counter that dominates the store's back end. Ruse is seated behind it, slouched over a bowl brimming with bugs armored with brown interlacing shells that can wrap around their wriggling bodies and contort them into tiny balls of stone. One by one, Ruse is tucking them into bottleneck jars stuffed with a sprig of greenery and half an inch of rust-colored dirt, scoring lines on a scroll to the side with each weighty plop. I watch her work, her wild tangle of curls such a bright shade of orange.
"Looks tedious." "I want to impale myself with this quill," she mutters, then corks the bottle she's currently filling and places a lid on the bowl.
She clasps her hands together, slaps a wide smile on her face, and beams at me through pretty, sunburst eyes.
"How can I be of service?"
I pass her Essie's list. The white tuft of an otherwise lanky tail rises from behind the counter, waving back and forth, making me smile.
"Hi, Uno."
The tuft wiggles faster before brushing Ruse's jaw affectionately, an adoring softness spreading across Ruse's face as she reaches beneath the counter, no doubt to rub Uno behind the ears. I wonder how big she's gotten. Miskuns are so scarce and greedily coveted, I rarely glimpse more than the expressive tail of the creature who dotes on Ruse like a mother. Which is a shame. She's such a sweet thing. Ruse hums, gaze still skimming the script.
"Can't help with whatever's supposed to be beneath this splat of blood," she murmurs, lifting her hand to scratch at it. "Messy job?"
"Unfortunately." I shrug. "He was a squirter."
"Ah.
Do you have any of the other things in stock?"
"You're in luck," she says, winking. "I have it all."
I breathe a sigh of relief, thankful I don't have to repeat the jar debacle. Ruse grabs a cloth bag and moves around the counter, humming while she shifts between the shelves. Returning, she lumps the laden bag before me and sits again, sliding a large leather-bound ledger into sight. She lifts the front cover, flicking through until she settles on a page titled Rafe, Dragon Bloodstone, 721 Buckets. My eyes widen. I had no idea I had so much currency. The swelling digits a running commentary on how many bodies I've shoved off the wall to be picked apart by the predators that dwell beneath.
"I see your numbers have grown since..."
The inky scrawl stating my well of wealth bleeds off the page like watery ink blown off a slippery surface before new digits appear in their place. Smaller digits. I frown. guess Serene decided to charge me for the mission I begged the Elding for support on, and only because there was no possible way I could save all those younglings by myself. Lovely. A stark reminder that the hand that gives can just as greedily take away. Ruse clears her throat, sliding her pink spectacles further down her nose, glancing up at me from beneath a fan of orange lashes. Busy slumber? Not the sort of busy they like, apparently. She gives me a rueful smile, then recomposes herself back into the vision of stoic storekeeper. Well, besides your purchases from the list, would you like to spend any more of your 610 buckets of dragon bloodstone? I chuff. Actually, I look at my gown, brushing my hands over the thick, ruddy panels. I had to toss a layer of this to the trog. Am I able to replace it? Won't be a problem. Her gaze flits over my ensemble, then back to her book as she lifts a curly blue quill, dips it in a pot of ink, and scratches something on my page. Anything else? My mind tunnels back to the moments following Tarek's disposal, to the quiet allure I experienced toward a heavily accented male I probably should have slaughtered. But I didn't, because he smelled good. Got any sawtooth blades? She pauses, looking at me from beneath an arched brow. Planning to hack somebody up? Hope not. I shrug. Humming again, she spins in her chair and pushes to a stand, snatching at the stone wall behind her. What's actually a ruined drape ripples as she rips it wide, revealing the full, gloomy expanse of the store that goes so deep it's hard to see the end, the real walls lined with vaults of bloodstone, weapons, armor, and various infantry. She unlocks one of the many grated repositories, retrieving a small saw she carries my way, tugging the curtain shut before she passes me the weapon. I weigh it in my hand, tossing it to the other. Good shape, but a little less weight in the handle would be better. She nods, scratching something else on my page. Hiding place? Thigh. Sheath? Colt leather. Preferably dyed fadestone brown, the buckles made of anything other than an iron compound. We say the last two words in unison, and the faintest smile tips her mouth as she bobs her head, still scratching. I'll have one forged to your size requirements and send a parchment lark when it's ready to be inspected. Perhaps by the next Aurora rise if you're wanting a rush job and willing to pay extra. Sounds good. I'd like it soon, just in case said cloaked male decides to prove me wrong about the box I placed him in. Any withdrawals this day? Nope, but I'll return once I've rested to draw down and do another bloodstone scatter. Folk are starving to death in the Undercity, and nobody's doing anything about it. As you wish. Ruse jots something on a notepad while I recall my first round of wages. Bloody payment for a bloody deed. That's all I could see it as. Nothing's changed. I only keep what I need to survive, to do my job, and to support Essie. My periodic donations to the poor, sick, and hungry are my quiet fuck you to those who think they can placate me by plying me with payments and approving my passion missions. It makes me feel like I'm winning, even though I'm not. I'll ensure we have enough for the withdrawal, Ruse says, curly quill wriggling as she scratches away. If the king put as much effort into feeding the poor as you do, the Fade would be a much better place to live. Like that's ever going to happen. I doubt he's gone hungry before. Not really. If he knew the weight of a hollow ache, perhaps he wouldn't be so incompetent. Though, maybe not. You can reshape a turd an infinite number of times, but it's still a turd. It still stinks. Ruse closes the ledger. I'll be in contact about the gown. Given your special requirements, it might take a while for the merchant who imported the material from the burn to source more of the same color. No rush, I say, gathering my bag full of Essie's things. Any other material makes me cook up. I'd rather have it made with the right stuff. She tilts her head in acknowledgement, and I turn to leave.
Not so fast, Rave.
Pausing, I look over my shoulder, brows pulling together as Ruse waves a recently unfolded parchment lark at me.
Apologies. I know you're tired, but Sareem wants to meet with you.
All that tension I'd worked so hard to extinguish while lying on the skybridge comes crashing back, making it feel like my heartstrings are being strung out across a rack.
Tell her I'll be back once I've slept.
If she can't be bothered coming down the stairs to request my presence herself, she's in no mood I want to deal with. Certainly not while hungry, sleep-deprived, and boasting a dwindling well of patience. I'm 3 steps closer to the exit when Ruse's voice chases me like the flick of a whip snapping around my ankles.
It was an order, Rave. Not a request.
Shackle tugged. I sigh, cast my stare to the ceiling, and count to 10 before I nod, then make for the barefaced door in the corner of the store and yank it open. How you can stand to exist in the same vicinity as that manipulative serpent is well beyond me, I mutter loud enough for Ruse to hear. Maybe Sareem, too. Ruse's laughter chases me all the way up the stairway and into the serpent's den. Rave. Chapter 8.
I heard that, Sareem snips out, her voice a whetted blade.
I unwind my veil, stepping into her long office, casting my gaze about the tidy space that boasts an extravagant amount of purple. Rugs, cushioned cedars, walls, bookshelves. Can't escape it. I think I'd actually like the color had I not been treated like a scratching post almost every time I've stepped foot in this room.
What?
I ask, finding Sareem by the large purple glass window that looks out upon the ditch below.
I'm genuinely baffled. Ruse deserves a raise for putting up with your shit on a constant basis.
Sareem spins, impaling me with her cool silver stare, her angular face perfectly painted. As always, never a hair out of place or a blemish to be seen, white Rooney bead hanging from her lobe. She's donning a thick purple coat that melds with her body, snowy tufts of fur spilling between each seam that match the color of her coiffed hair. My eyes narrow on the chain around her neck, threaded with a silver vial that's etched in luminous runes, every cell in my body screaming for me to lunge forward and rip it free. Tip its contents down a drain. Instead, I move toward the huge desk that dominates the space, everything on it perfectly squared. Setting my bag on the floor, I drop into the boxy chair reserved for visitors and kick my legs up over the armrest. I bite my tongue everywhere else. I refuse to bite it here. Feel free to cut me loose if it bothers you so, I say, batting my lashes. Promise I won't complain. Quite the opposite. I might even do the odd side assassination for the cause in between hunting folk I choose to hunt. Murderers, child abusers, incompetent kings. The muscle in Serene's jaw pops, her eyes hardening like molten ore dropped in a bed of snow. You'd struggle without the Ath's unlimited support were you forced to live like the masses, Rave. Don't forget how well we pad your pockets. There would be no more dragon bloodstone to scatter throughout the Undercity and give you that false sense of importance you can't seem to live without. I see neither of us are in the mood to play nice. Sliding a blade from my bodice, I thump my boots on her desk, nudging a few of her perfectly lined up quills. Don't act like you care about my well-being. You don't, I say, flipping the weapon between my fingers. You're just the bitch who clamped a shackle around my wrist and called it mercy. The vein in Serene's temple swells so much I quietly hope it'll burst. It's surprising you speak to me with such disrespect, given said shackle. Yeah, I mutter, using the blade to dig some of Tarek's dried blood from beneath my nails. To what do I owe the honor of being summoned into your den, Sareem? She glares at me, watching me flick curls of hardened blood upon her plush purple rug. It's always interesting to see how far I can push her before she sweeps me from her space like a long-legged bug she can't eradicate fast enough, hoping she'll eventually decide my presence is more hassle than it's worth. She paces toward me, lowering into the plump purple throne on her side of what I consider our makeshift barricade, folding her hands together atop the desk. I wanted to make sure you received my parchment, Lark.
Is the mission complete? I ask, brow arched.
No confirmation yet. I mean the one I sent last cycle, just before the Aurora fell.
Fresh orders. Lovely. My interest dissolves, stare cast on my nails again, digging out more filth. Must have gotten lost. Perhaps it'll circle back round once I've slept, as they often do. So consider it. You should take notes.
I sense her simmering frustration like a welling storm cloud that clots up the air with a static charge. Still, I flick, flick, flick.
Funny how you're the only one who has trouble receiving my larks.
One of the world's great phenomena.
Doubtful.
A brief pause, then,
Rex Moonplume is in the city hutch.
My heart drops, gaze whipping up, plunging into Serene's stony stare. Who's he hunting?
Us.
My responding curse is as sharp as the blade in my hand.
He's been hired by the Crown, and he's here to put a pin in our rebellion, to stop us from draining the kingdom of its fresh-faced conscripts.
Well, he needs to die. I swing my boots off the table and sheathe my blade.
I'll take care of him,
I say, an eager hitch to my voice. Every time I've seen the bounty hunter, the metal spurs on the back of his boots have been caked in blood. Don't need a grand imagination to work out who the blood belongs to. Likely the poor Moonplume he apparently charmed after slaughtering its former rider, if the rumors are true. I'll take a vast amount of pleasure in his assassination. I rise from my seat.
No,
Serene bites out, and I frown.
What do you mean, no?
Sit, Rave.
I sigh, then do as she ordered, loathing the spark of satisfaction in her eye.
Why don't you want me to kill him? I ask, past clenched teeth. That's what I do. I take out the trash nobody else wants to muddy their hands with, sweeping the path clear of any filth that might prevent the Ath from completing its missions.
Wreck is in the path, Serene. He's endangering other members, most of whom I respect.
She gives me a bland look that doesn't so much as pinch, though perhaps it would if she'd ever done anything to gain my respect.
Let me at him.
No. That fucking word again.
Why not?
Because he's well-watched bait.
Then I'm perfect for the job.
No, she chides for the third time.
Your instructions are to lie low until he's gone. That means no random slaughterings when you find someone doing something they shouldn't or hear someone crying out for help. No jobs, nothing, until I say otherwise. You will only leave your home to purchase produce or to come to me if I call on you.
I frown, thoughts churning hard and fast, whisking into a snowstorm caught beneath my ribs. There's not a single hit Rex Zaros has failed to bring down, so he's not leaving this city without blood on the tip of his barbed whip.
If we don't eliminate him, he'll take one of us down, and it won't be pretty.
I'm aware, she says through tight lips, a stern finality to her tone that strikes my nerves with that Serene serpent bite. Meaning, she's going to toss somebody considered less useful at him, a sacrifice to the ravenous crown. Something inside me splinters, bowing beneath an immense weight pressing against my ribs, my upper lip curling.
You feed the monster and more will slip from the shadows. Once the smell of blood taints the air, they don't stop coming.
Sareem sighs, reaching across the desk to straighten her quill collection.
Are you going to tell me how to do my job again, Rave?
It's getting old for me, too.
Every time we intercept a transport carriage full of young elemental conscripts, it's a bandage on a much bigger problem. So long as the king continues to rule, there will be more carriages, more bounty hunters, more death and suffering.
Still, her eyes are cast on her quills, like she values the task more than she values everything the Fyr Duath is supposed to stand for. I snarl, slashing my hand across the table, littering the floor with feathers.
What about the sick, the starving, the nulls?
Slowly, she pulls her hand back, scouring me with a wide-eyed stare.
We spent all slumber saving 57 nulls. At your bidding, an operation I funded myself, I snip, brow raised. Or perhaps you thought I wouldn't notice, since I don't often check my reserves?
Of course I docked your reserves, she sneers. Running such a large-scale operation is costly in ways you'll never understand. We risked our entire cause to keep you happy, hindered political progress. Someone had to pay.
To keep me happy. Right. You know what that tells me? I say with a humorless laugh. That the Ath doesn't value the nulls as much as it values the elementals. I don't go down to the Undercity just to scatter bloodstones, Sareem. I go down there to see if anybody needs help because nobody else seems to give a fuck.
She snatches the vial dangling between her breasts.
Shit. I brace myself as she scrapes the tip of her tailored nail down the groove of my rune. My entire body jolts, the same scratching sensation scoring one of my ribs like a filleting blade.
Why can't you just be happy? She snips while my breaths come short and sharp, eyes narrowed on the poisonous female. You have the Elding's favor. He does more for you than he's ever done for anyone else. Isn't that enough?
I bind my side with a trembling hand, struggling to wrap my mind around the jealous taint to her tone. Not only have I never met the Elding, but being his favorite is swiftly tumbling to the bottom of my priority list.
She lifts her nail, brows hiked up to her forehead, finger poised to mess me up all over again.
Creators, I loathe this female.
Hard to be happy when the king's mincing young elemental minds until they're brainless killing monsters. When thousands of less valued folk are rotting in the Undercity, failing to scratch out an existence in the mines, slaves to the kingdom's well-oiled cogs.
Wiping beads of sweat from my brow, I reach into my pocket, unscrunch the notice I ripped off the wall, and slap it on the desk, though Sareem merely glances at it.
If we don't usurp the king, I'm convinced things are going to get much, much worse.
Not now, she says in a firm, even tone. Not until the Elding deems it so.
Same story, different day.
Screw the Elding.
Another sadistic scrape of her nail, this one scouring down the knobbles of my spine. Another series of hissed breaths, and I chew on the urge to lurch across the table and pop her eyeballs from their sockets. Fuck the repercussions. But I hold my composure, the pain still slicing down my bowing vertebrae like skipping stones as I speak through gritted teeth.
Slitting King Kadok Vagor's throat will not only keep me from being a pain in your ass, it'll protect the cause.
She releases the vial. I swallow my breath of relief, refusing to give her the satisfaction, instead jabbing an unsteady finger at the notice that's fully armed to do irreparable damage.
Nobody will suspect it, given the heat surrounding our name.
Simply killing him without a thorough, well-constructed plan would leave the queen in charge.
Perfect!
I throw my hands in the air, wondering why it was presented as a negative when it's exactly what this kingdom needs.
This is her ancestral land. She should be in charge.
The Tri-Council would never allow it. Queen Dothea can only speak with Claude.
A sour taste coats my tongue.
Don't they have a tribede son? Prince Turon hasn't been seen for many phases. Some say he went mad, and rather than make the problem public, the king was all too happy to hide him away. But he's still more competent than King Cadoc Vagor. Perhaps he'll pop his head back up once his paw's remains fertilize the ground? Serene looks at me like she's more than ready to grab the broom and sweep me toward the door. Again, Rave, you assume you have some say in the matter. You don't. You have one job, and that's to follow my orders. When I say stab, you say how deep. When I say leave Rek'Zaros alone, you leave Rek'Zaros well the fuck alone. It's weird hearing her swear. Perhaps I'd pump my fist and call it a victory if anger wasn't churning in my gut like a snowball that grows with each bouldered roll. How do you live with yourself? Honestly. She grips her vial again, and my entire body flinches. Satisfaction ignites her eyes, a smirk curling her lips that boils my blood. These aren't easy decisions to make, but I must consider the cause, first and foremost. Your strong affinity with Claude, your skill with a blade, and that savage side I glimpsed before you collapsed in the Undercity the first time we met makes you an essential tool we can't do without. An icy rumble builds in my chest. I curse the day she fell upon me. Seeing that side of me, I barely understand myself. Not that I remember that part of our meeting. Tucked beyond a veil of ice, I was all too happy to ball up and wither beneath. I do remember the screams that somehow found their way down to me. I also remember being pitted with a certainty that whatever I was doing was not okay, but that the part of me in control lived by a different set of rules. That in their eyes, it was tame. Serim later told me I looked out at her through black, glittery eyes. Face splashed in blood, canines bared, and that she knew I was broken beyond repair, in desperate need of an avenue to channel my rage. I see it differently now. I think she saw me, surrounded by the mulched bodies of freshly slain folk who'd come to hunt me down, and decided broken things make the sharpest weapons, so long as you fetter them to yourself so they don't fly away. You coped just fine without me before you snatched me from the gutter. I gave you the option, she volleys, quick as a blink. A deep belly laugh wrestles up my throat, spilling out in a mirthless tone. And what an option it was, I muse. Die, or drip my blood into your ruined vial and be a forever slave to your whim, able to be yanked to heel at any given opportunity. Except it wasn't voiced that way, was it? You offered me revenge, painted such a pretty picture I was salivating to give you my blood, falling into your web like a plump bug, immediately put to work. So many empty promises. Ironically, had you simply asked me to join the cause, I may have agreed, given the drowning amount of injustice I soon discovered in this kingdom. But you just had to slap a collar around my neck. She sighs, long and deep. The breezy confidence of someone who lives in a bubble of safety I can't penetrate. Always so dramatic, Rave. Truly, I've never met someone with so much battle in their blood. Her elegant hand grips the vial hanging between her breasts. Perhaps you wouldn't be so bitter were you not constantly testing me, forcing me to take advantage of the blood bind.
Yeah, okay, it's my fault.
Can't you see you're made for this?
Sure, I deadpan. Nothing quite like the constant threat of a casual torture session to make you feel right at home. It's nothing personal. Everybody puts their blood in the vial, except you, benefiting from its many advantages.
Remember how quickly I was able to heal you? She continues seamlessly. You would have died without it. Besides, you're the only one I'm forced to punish.
And what do you do for the cause? I ask, brow raised, besides sucking the Elding's metaphorical cock.
Her cheeks flush, painted lips falling open. Not that any words come out.
My brows bump up. not so metaphorical, it seems.
You chose to live, she seethes. Sure, it's no longer on your terms, but at least you're breathing. I'd think you'd be more humble toward the one who saved your life.
I click my tongue, trying to imagine a world where someone would deign to help another without expecting something in return. Failing. Thousands of times I've been pieced back together. Only once was it for my own benefit. But Fallon's dead. Her light extinguished. All that goodness gone from the world. Serene may think she saved my life, but all she did was cage me again, carving Fallon's death into an even deeper tragedy. I'd rather be back in our cell, looking up at the moons Fallon sketched on our ceiling with blunt bits of coal. Would rather be listening to her vivid explanations for the colorful clouds draped across the fade, her words so descriptive my mouth would water, like I could taste the colors, feeling their textures puff against my tongue. She made freedom sound so exquisite with her big, beautiful vocabulary. Made it sound so magical. I couldn't wait to taste clouds with her, to lie on our backs, side by side, and look upon the real moons. Together. But she's dead, and I'm here, shackled to this purple-scaled serpent, doing none of the living I promised Fallon I'd do before I lost her, before I woke to find her cold, unmoving. The barbed memory is an icy spike hammered into my hardened heart, all the way to the soft core, pitting me with a twinge of raw, familiar pain. No. I sink into my inner self, landing upon the crumbled obsidian shore of my immense frozen lake, struck by the eerie silence that always makes my skin pebble. I pinch a fist-sized stone I use to bind the offending memory around, then creep out onto the smooth, frosty expanse that soothes the bare soles of my feet. Kneeling, I carve a hole in the thick ice, cold water oozing up the moment it cracks free. I tip the lid, plop the heavy thought down the gap, and rush away, the hairs on the back of my neck lifting as I blink back to my external reality. My next breath is a blow of icy air, Serene's earlier words still echoing through my mind. You chose to live. Sure, it's no longer on your terms. At least you're still breathing. I look at the female watching me down the line of her nose like she'd love for me to drop to my knees and kiss her purple shoes. My life has never been on my terms. I stand, wrap my veil around my face, then gather her quills off the ground and lump them on the desk, rearranging them in order of size, just the way she likes. And I refuse to accept this as living. I grab my bag and turn, moving toward the door. I didn't say you could leave, Rave. Drag your nails down my rune again. I shrug. See if I care. I slam the door on my way out. Diary entry. Elowin Nevan. Age 9 phases. 5,030 phases after stone. Hadeon leaves early next cycle to try and steal his own moonplume egg. He has to slay there and spend many slumbers in snow huts on the way, even though it's dangerous beyond Arithia's walls. Seems a bit silly to me, since Poppy's moonplume could carry him there so fast. But Hadeon keeps saying that's how it's always been done, that he wants to prove himself. I don't think Mommy and Poppy want him to prove anything because I overheard them beg him not to go. Not that it worked. This Aurora fall, Hadeon smiled big and made lots of jokes while I was helping him fold his clothes and tuck them into his bag, but I can tell he's scared. I can tell because he gave me 3 butterberry chews from the jar he keeps beside his pallet. Normally, he never gives me more than 1 at a time because he says they'll give me a bellyache, which is a lie, I ate all three and my belly feels fine.
Poppy said it's really hard to get a moonplume egg, that you have to go to Netherin, the place where it's too cold for almost everything else to grow or breathe, and climb really high ice towers without being seen, that you have to steal the egg from a mommy moonplume's nest, then get back down the tower fast and quiet. My brother's big, and he makes lots of noise all the time. He doesn't know how to breathe soft or make his boots not crunch in the snow. Even his voice is rough and coarse like grain. He doesn't hear any of the elemental songs.
Maybe those butterberry chews do give you a bellyache after all, because I don't feel so good anymore. I don't think my brother's coming home from Netherin.
Rave. Chapter 10. Slamming the door shut on the curly quill, I charge west through the rowdy ditch now packed full of merchant carts, folk flocking to claim the cheapest bushels of vegetables they can barter. I'd planned to stop for a cinder cream pastry from one of my favorite merchants on the way home, but after having all of Serene's purple-toned trash stuffed down my throat, I've lost the urge. A chorus of panicked gasps has me pausing, gaze whipping around, following a sea of upturned stares. My pulse scatters at the sight of an adult molten maw gliding almost close enough to rip a ballista off the wall with its massive talons. A gust of wind slams down with the might of its magnificent wings, almost unveiling me. Chest expanding, it lengthens its neck, cranks its maw, and paints the sky in a plume of flame that pours enough heat into the ditch to turn the snow slushy. Folks scream, dashing for cover beneath sky bridges that are, in all honesty, completely fucking useless. If that beast decided to turn its head and torch us, I doubt a single one of us could do anything to stop it. Dragonflame doesn't abide by the rules of nature. Ignos's language can't deter it from blistering skin, melting flesh and bone. Destroying cities. Only a Dagamorc can wield Dragonflame,